By way of introduction, 5 centuries ago, we merited to have one of the greatest thinkers of all times in Jewish history, and his name was Rabbi Yitzchak Luria, otherwise known as the Arizal. And we don't have his original writings, but rather we have the writings of his students, the most prominent of which is Rabbi Chaim Vital. And you may know that the Arizal is buried in Tzfat. That was his city. And there are many stories about him and legends that he was above time and space. He was a miracle maker. And what he's most famous for in the intellectual sphere is his insights into Kabbalah. And what I'd like to talk to you about tonight is his insights into the neshama. And this is very Kabbalistic, most of which goes beyond my comprehension, but we'll try to do the best we can, and if any of you could help me out tonight, that would be great. Because the neshama is pure spirit. It's not something physical. It's not something that we see, and not something that we experience up front, and it's very hard for us to get a picture of what the neshama is all about. So obviously we're taking upon ourselves a project that's very challenging, but it's challenging in two ways. Not only to try to understand and get a glimpse of what the neshama is all about and how it connects with the goof, just understand that intellectually, but it's also challenging because of the language. Those who come from the Kabbalistic school of thought, which takes us from the Zohar back in the time of Shimon bar Yochai to the Arizal 5 centuries ago and his students, they have developed a language of their own. It's Lashon Kodesh, but there's terms here that we don't understand. Or are you settled? If not, there's a seat for you here, wherever you feel comfortable. Okay. Now, about the time of the Arizal, a contemporary of his, who also considered himself a student of the Ari, was the Or Chaim HaKadosh. His name was Rav Chaim Ben Attar. Much of his writings, he wrote a super commentary on the Torah, are either based on the Arizal or on the Kabbalistic notions of the students of the Arizal. And tonight, we're going to look at the Or Chaim HaKadosh on Parshas Vayechi. I tried to use this class on Tuesday nights to integrate both Kabbalistic thinking with the Parsha whenever I possibly can. So that's what we want to do tonight. I was wavering back and forth. At some point I thought I was going to give a class about Asara B'Teves, which is day after tomorrow, but I decided to save that class till I'm more prepared, which will be tomorrow afternoon, and I give that class over Skype to my Torontonian friends, because I spent 2 years in Canada. Now, the background from the Parsha to this Or HaChaim, quoting the Arizal, is the pasuk here at the end of the Torah of Sefer Bereishis, Vayikrevu Yemei Yisrael Lamus. And I guess we would translate that loosely as the end of the days of Yaakov Avinu were coming close, and he was moving towards death. And that's when he calls in his son Yosef, and he makes Yosef take the oath that he would bury his remains back in Canaan. But we're not focused on that aspect. We're focused now on those words, Vayikrevu Yemei Yisrael Lamus. And the Or HaChaim HaKadosh says that from a perspective of syntax, of Hebrew grammar or language, there's something very strange over here. The word Vayikrevu is a word that refers to space and not to time. So let's say, for example, you have two objects, and you want to take one and make it closer to the other. You want to reload them. Then you say, Vayikruvu. I took it from one place, and now it became closer to another object. But when it comes to time, time is not physical, and therefore you cannot use a word like Vayikruvu to bring it from one point to the other with regard to time. And the word after Vayikruvu in the Pasuk is Yimei, which means the days of Yisrael. Day is a reference to a unit of time. How can a unit of time become closer? You might use sometimes we have expressions that are not they're not to be taken literally. But in the Torah itself, when it comes to understanding the words of Lashon Kodesh, we have to see how we can explain the word in its context. So this is not seen as some sort of an expression or colloquialism, you know, that we can, you know, interpret it, in a very liberal sort of way. We want to know a literal translation. And that's what you'll see here on number two. Again, I always say my class is a combination of concepts and text. You know, I like to be connected to a text. The Or HaChaim says there's a problem over here. Vayikruvu, v'chi biyomim, is it possible that regarding days, Shayach Lomar Losh and Kreva, they came close? What do you mean they came close? The days came close. So again, we might use a phrase, if you were counting the days to your graduation, so you would say, my graduation days came close, or my graduation day came close. So you were counting the days of, you know, till you celebrate a certain holiday. So the days are coming closer. You might use that phrase. But when you think about it, it doesn't make any sense. You know, days don't become closer because days are not physical objects.
What would it be a word that theoretically would have been used instead of, could use with
it? He doesn't suggest another alternative. My guess would be Vayikruvu, I guess my guess would be the following. Lo nisharu harbe yomim ad miso, something like that. You know, there weren't that many days left till he would die, or something like that. But vayikruvu, that the days came closer, and he writes, and this is number three, zman eino gashmi, that time is not physical, and therefore lo shayach bo, you can't talk about being closer or being further. What does it mean vayikruvu? Now, in order to put things into perspective, what the Or HaChaim is going to try to analyze, amongst other things, is sleep. Now, you and I know that the body needs to rest. But he's interested more in answering the question, what is sleep on a philosophical level or conceptual level? You know, God created man in such a way that he needs sleep. Why is that part of the divine plan? You know, you could explain it perhaps on a level of biology, but he's interested in something above biology, that, you know, something that belongs to a more conceptual, abstract world of mysticism. Now, the only statement that we have in the Gemara itself about sleep is number four, a Gemara in Brachos Nun Zayin Amid Beis. The Gemara gives a list of five things, each of which can be described as a fraction of one, or a ratio of 1 to 60. The first thing is fire. Fire is to Gehenom, which that's the place we don't want to end up with after we die, as 1 is to 60. Dvash, honey, is to the man that fell in the Midbar, as 1 is to 60. So if you eat dvash, which by the way, I think the latest research is that honey is very healthy. I don't know, they may change their mind tomorrow, but right now, that's where we're holding. So it's like 1/60th of man. Shabbos, the experience of Shabbos, is like 1/60th of the world to come. And sleeping, which is Shena, is 1/60th of death. Finally, dreams are 1/60th of prophecy. So the one that, of all this list that we're going to focus our attention on, is Shena, sleep. Sleep is 1/60th of death. What the Aruch Chaim HaKadosh is going to try to do for us, he's going to try to present a piece of mystical Torah from the Arizal, and on the basis of that, to perhaps give us an insight, a deeper insight into what exactly is the function of sleep. Again, not on a biological level, but on an esoteric or metaphysical level. What is the purpose of sleep? Obviously, sleep has some relation to death, but we wouldn't think that God would build death into the system of life. So we're hoping that at the end of the day, there's some redeeming feature to sleeping. It's not just 1/60th of death in the negative sense, but in a positive sense as well. And now we get to the Arizal. Now the Arizal is quoted over and over again in different books and different works, pretty much verbatim, word for word. Mostly in the works of Reb Chaim Vital, who is the outstanding disciple of the Ari, and that you'll see in numbers 5 and 6. And it's also quoted in a more recent work that was put together, which is number 7, also based on the writings of Reb Chaim Vital. And this is the Arizal's description of the Neshama. So again, I tell you right up front, I've never seen the Neshama. I don't know if any of you have. I say that with a certain smile because the Neshama is not something that you can see with your biological eyes. So that the language here is going to be very mystical. Okay? Now, one of the key words here is called nitzotzos. So if you're looking at number 5, or for that matter, you could see it in number 6, and number 7, you'll see it again in the Aruch Chaim HaKadosh in number 8. The word nitzotzos. Now, literally speaking, when you have a fire, then the fire shoots off sparks, and those are called nitzotzos. But the Gemara tells us in many places that nitzotzos is a davar she'ein bo mamish. Because if you notice that these little pieces of fire that shoot out, they automatically disintegrate, you know, almost, you know, when they hit the target, wherever they land. So obviously, when we talk about nitzotzos, we're talking about some sort of an entity which is totally abstract. It has no physical essence to it. But yet, with regard to the neshama, it plays a crucial role. The second term that he uses here is called Gilgul. Now, Gilgul usually means that the soul appears over and over again throughout the history of man in different bodies. So, for example, the soul might enter into one body at one time and then enter into a different body at another time. That's called transmigration of souls. That's a very basic concept in mystical thinking, but we don't have to go into that now. We have another terminology here, which is very important, which is called Selem, which literally means the image, and man in his totality is a tselem, made up of different parts. One of those parts is called the neshama, the other part is called the guf, the physicality of man, and there's some sort of mirror image between the two. And in this context, in this connection, we also have the nitzotzos of the neshama. And what's the significance of these nitzotzos? Again, I can't translate the word into English, so I just have to hope that you'll, you know, I know, David, you want me to translate every word. I can't always do that. So I'm hoping that you'll take this word nitzotzos as a function of the neshama on a very abstract level. It's just a word, but it's a crucial word. We don't know what it means, but it's a crucial word. And the Arizal says that every single tselem has X number of nitzotzos. And that number X is not coincidental, but rather it corresponds to the days of a person's life. So you take the number 365, which refers to the days in 1 year, and you multiply it by the amount of years that a person lives, and that's the number of nitzotzos in his neshama. What'd he say? Sparks. Again, for the lack of any better word, we'll call it sparks. Again, Only if you understand by the word sparks that we're talking about something that's very abstract, that's not physical. That's my only precondition here. If you want to use the word sparks, that's fine. So every nitzotz, every single nitzotz that a person is endowed with, or more specifically his neshama is endowed with, and if I use the masculine, don't worry about that, it could be his or her, right, it doesn't matter. Every single nitzotz is a gift from the Almighty of another day of life. And one of the issues that we're going to discuss tonight is, do you want more nitzotzos or do you want less nitzotzos? Do you want more days in your life or do you want less days in your life? Okay, I'm just throwing that out there because I know intuitively we would all vote, let's get some more nitzotzos, but it's not so simple, as we'll see.
Well, we want some good
nitzotzos. So now, what are these nitzotzos, these days? According to the philosophy of the Arizal, the nitzotzos are what we call the challenges of life. Every day becomes a challenge. And every day a tselem faces a parshas drachim, a split in the road, a crossroads. Okay, crossroads. Every day we face a crossroads. Every day is a challenge. And on that page that represents the day, you have to write one of two things. Either you write mitzvos, that means you lived up to the challenges successfully, and you utilized every opportunity the way it should be. And in that case, the nitzotz goes up to Shamayim after the day passes, and it has what's called a tikkun. A tikkun means it has a certain perfection to it. If, on the other hand, we frizzled away that opportunity of that day, then what happens to that nitzotz is it becomes pogum. Pogum means it's damaged. So again, we can either perfect the nitzotz, and then it goes up to Shamayim and it speaks our merits, or the opposite might happen, and instead of perfecting and improving the nitzotz, we wasted it away, and it becomes pogum. It becomes a disheveled or, you know, something that's out of shape. What word can we use? Defective. Excellent. Defective. Now he introduces another couple of terms here, just to confuse us even further. He says that there's something called kalim. Kalim are those dimensions of the universe that are potentially good, but in order to make them good, we have to convert them into something called levushim. Okay, so that's another terminology from the world of mysticism. And these kalim, if they are turned to levushim, they prepare a person for Gan Eden. And not only that, the Arizal believes that to some extent we can experience Gan Eden on this world, even as we are at Tselem, but only if we turn and convert the kalim into levushim. That means we face these challenges and we improve and rectify and perfect these kalim. He says that this is the daily challenge that we face as a tzelem. Now we're going to fast forward to the Aruch Chaim HaKadosh in number 8, because again, everything in the middle is just another repeat performance of the same. So there are no chidushim here in numbers 6 or 7. And for the most part, the Aruch Chaim HaKadosh until the end of our page is going to also repeat and summarize what we know from the Arizal. And Omnam, you'll see on the fourth line in number 8, he says, Yadata, you know, me hischalkus haneshamos, that every neshama has parts to it. Again, they're not physical parts, because the neshama is not physical, but they have metaphysical parts. And these parts are called the nitzotzos. And what happens with these nitzotzos that form the parts, make up the parts of its of neshama? They define the tselem, and they correspond in number to the Yemei Chayav to the days of a person's life. And those days are days that challenge man, lasos bahem mitzvos. If he does live up to the challenge and he does mitzvos, nitkan, he perfects the nitzos. And all the mitzvahs that he does in one day will perfect that nitzos for that day. Because as we said before, every day has its own nitzos, which makes up the tzelem. And that nitzos, it corresponds to that day. So in a sense, every nitzos has an address, or I should say a name on it. The name that's written on that nitzos is the calendar day, the 24-hour period of that particular nitzos. And if he doesn't do a mitzvah, nishar pogum nitzotahu shel atzelem, and then the nitzot which corresponds to that day which he withered away and wasted away becomes pogum, it becomes defective. And that's the Or Chaim HaKadosh's summary of the Arizal. Now from this point on, the Or Chaim HaKadosh, under the influence of this presentation of the Ari, derives conclusions, meaning he says that the Arizal's thesis is going to shed a light on X, on Y, on Z, on different parts. He gets very excited about it. He has a certain drama. He says, Mama od heira hakdama zu ene maskil bekama prote hakiros. How great is the light that this sheds for the person who tries to understand many different unknowns. Chakiros means unknowns. Ha'echad, number one. Heira einenu besod hashena. This will open our eyes as to the purpose or the secret behind shena, sleeping. What's going to happen when a person sleeps? Kihi lalos nitzos keneged hayom ahu. In other words, a person went through an entire day while he was awake, and hopefully he lived to the fate, you know, he successfully faced the challenges of that day. Now the nitzos is ready to go on high. Now, again, that nitzos represents the life force of that day. If the nitzos is going to go up towards heaven after hopefully he succeeded in doing a tikkun, what happens to the person? The person dies, so to speak. He doesn't really die, but he's lacking in that nitzos that gives him life.
But so, that was the day that passed, so then the new day has a new one.
No, but I'm saying what happens is, at what point is that, in other words, let's assume that the night follows the day. Okay? I don't know if that's true, but let's assume
the night comes and then the day, huh?
You and I, because we know the halacha that the night precedes the day, but let's assume that in the life of a tzelem, day comes first, and you did whatever you did, and now you close that day. When you close that day, the nitzotz goes up on high, because it's already achieved whatever it has to achieve, hopefully in a positive way. So that perfection of the nitzos now allows the nitzos to go up on high. Now, if the nitzos represents the days of a person's life, then once that nitzos is removed from the neshama because it goes up on high, then you're already beginning to get closer to death. Okay, then?
Unless someone was added on the other end.
Right, but the assumption here is that from the day that you're born, you have X number of nitzotos, and that number never changes. It only goes down, it doesn't go up.
What about tshuva for that?
Oh, so wait a minute, he's about to, that's going to be his point number two, is about tshuva. But before we get to tshuva, let's just understand why is death called 1/60th, I'm sorry, why is sleeping called 1/60th of death? He says, v'hu soda amram ki ashena echad achas mishishim amisa. Why? Because when he goes to sleep, that sleep is a reflection of the fact that he lost that nitzotz, meaning it exhausted its purpose, it went up to heaven, and now he's in a partial state of death. You might even add something else, that maybe now the night and the sleeping at night will re-energize him with the nitzotz that's coming up online, you know, that he has to face the challenge of the next nitzotz of the next day, so he needs to sort of re-energize himself. But that he doesn't say. I just But now he says that the good news is that ein yitzias hanitzos behechlet, that even though at the end of the day, that particular day, the nitzos packs out, so to speak, it packs up its bags, but it's not behechlet. It's not totally lost. Mukeres me'aneshama. Mukeres means it doesn't become alien to the neshama, as if it's a separate entity that's lost to the neshama. Ela, but rather nifrad me'akol, although it's separated from the rest of the tselem, which is made up of the neshama and its nitzotzos. Odenu nisrach v'nisbach ba'nefesh. It's the nitzotz is still somewhat connected to the nefesh itself, to the spirit. The word nisbach, you may remember from Chumash, after the Akedah, when the Maal tells Avram to desist. Correct, so the isle, how do you say isle in English, the ram? Mm-hmm. Yeah, the ram's horns are nisbach, bekarnov. They get tangled, what word?
Entangled.
Entangled, excellent. Entangled in the
brush.
What do you say?
Brush.
In the brush. Entangled in the brush.
What's nisbach?
Nisbach is entangled.
Okay.
Again, I don't know, this may be a fancy word. I don't have a thesaurus here. We need a thesaurus here. Okay. But basically what he's saying is that the nitzotz is not gone. You know, this is good news. Because again, the nitzotz is something that we still want to hold on to, and especially if, heaven forbid, we wasted away that nitzotz, and instead of rectifying it, we... what was the word we used before, Ora? We...
The English?
Yeah, the English word that you used before, we...
Defected.
We defected it. Is there a verb called defected? I don't know. No, it's probably that... We made it defective. Fine. So he says, Zemi Chesed Kel, this is the compassion of Almighty God, Shekol Nitzotz, every single Nisha Zocha V'yomo, which he was able to enjoy during that day, hinehu rochok me'ahefsed. It's interesting. You know, you and I might think, well, taking away the nitzotz, separating the nitzotz, is something bad, because if the nitzotz is good, you want to hold on to it. But he said, no, this is a compassion, a divine compassion, because if the nitzotz remains close to the neshama in the tzelem, then what happens if he fails? If he has a setback on a spiritual level, then that nitzotz, which was boasting his merits, will now become defective. So he says, no, there's no way that the nitzotz that he successfully achieved will become defective. Why? Because it's rochok me'ahefseid. It's, so to speak, protected. If it was still completely connected to the neshama, then you could really lose it. You could pollute it and contaminate it. So God says, no, it's in a place where you can't. So, in other words, it's engraved in stone. Whatever you achieved on that day, in the positive sense, is there. But then on the there's also a compassion on the flip side. Gam kishiyarshia ha'adam achorov. He says, and if, heaven forbid, he was evil on that day, vanitzos eshoyala pogum, now the nitzos that goes up is defective, as we called it, hinehu yochol letakin, since the nitzos is still somewhat connected. Do you follow what's going on here? We're getting the benefits on both ends of the spectrum. This is what's called the modern Hebrew litfos tachevel mishtak tzavot. It's like I can grab onto it from both polar extremes, and both that working in my favor because of divine compassion. On the one hand, if I did well that day and the nitzos was rectified and elevated, so it's a good thing that it separates itself in a way that it's protected and I cannot pollute it. On the other hand, if I failed and I corrupted that nitzos, it's a good thing that the nitzos is not totally disconnected. It's still nisbach, it's still entangled in the nefesh, and that allows me to rectify the nitzos that was pogum, that was defective, and that's called what?
Tshuva.
Okay, now we turn to the second page. He says, Yoshev Anitzos V'yitaken. Now he has an opportunity of, so to speak, bringing back, retracting the Nitzos, or bringing it back and now improving V'yitaken. V'gamzemi chazdeh mischased alokeinu yisal shmo. This is also a great chesed on the part of HaKadosh Baruch. Okay.
So the good ones are stored away and the ones that aren't are allowed to be fixed.
Correct. So it works in both directions. So that's the location of the nitzotz is perfect. The proximity of the nitzotz to the person, to his tzelem, facilitates the ability for him to do tshuva if it was corrupt. And on the other hand, the distance that was created between the nitzotz and the tzelem, that guarantees that if it was positive and it was a rectification, a tikkun, it will be protected from any sort of hefse. You can never, it can only go up, it can't go down. That's the divine compassion. Yeah, that's number one. Okay.
So why can't we just say that in fact it's a substitute for mitzvot and averot?
Correct.
Mitzvot are always stored, and the averot you can do tshuva.
Correct. This is the practical application of what he's saying. In other words, what he's doing is he's creating a metaphysics of how the neshama operates and the mechanics of the neshama, which is going to give us a push to realize that, you know, we want to hold on to these nitzotzos and use every single day for mitzvos, and that's going to make a major improvement, because these nitzotzos, once they're in a state of tikkun, they're going to go up to shamayim, and we'll see how they work on our benefit. So you're right. Ultimately, you know, the difference between the Ari and, let's say, Reb Chaim Shmulevitz, if he was giving a Musa Shmuz in the mirror, is that the Bali Musa would just simply say, do as many mitzvahs as you can. Don't, lolifas face, don't, what do you say?
Waste.
Don't waste any opportunity. Don't let it slip through your hands. That's the way the ethical moralists would say it. But the mystics say it in a whole different way, because they do this kind of metaphysical analysis of how of the makeup of the neshama, and now what becomes critical is the day as a unit. You know, this is going to all tie back to our pasuk of Ayikruvu Yemei Yaakov Lamus, and he says number two, Gam Heir Lamul Einin Tshuvas Taromas Gam Bnei Adam VeGam Bnei Ish. Okay, let me try to give a little background to what I call round number two in the Or HaChaim HaKadosh. People have made very critical comments about the history of man. How is it? Okay, who remembers how long Adam HaRishon lived? 930 years. Okay? Now, by the time we get to Noach, which is not much later, people are dying in half that time period. You'll see if you go through the Psukim and Bereishis, you'll see people living to the age of 500, no longer to 1,000. There were people who lived actually more than 1,000 years. And then when you move closer to our times, you get to numbers like 100 years old, and then you get down to numbers like 70 or 80 years old. And people are wondering about this. Why is it that God, you know, doesn't give us, you know, the opportunities that... you know, this is the question that I hinted at before. You know, what would you feel like if I asked you, what would be your answer if I asked you, do you want more nitzotzos or less nitzotzos? If each nitzotz represents a day in your life. So why is it that we're cheated, so to speak, and, you know, we're hoping that maybe we'll get, 70, 80 years, and yet Adam HaRishon got 930 years. And he says, if you take a look at the general graph of history, Banav u'bnei banav, you look at the children of Adam HaRishon and their grandchildren, Shmonameos, Shvameos, it goes down to 800 years and 700 years. And Anachnu, we're already in the generation where Hamafli b'chachim, you know, someone who lives to a very, very old age, Lo Yagia Lemea Shonim. Okay, Rav Steinemann died, he was 104, they say, I don't know. But it's very rare. I met a woman in Canada who was 102, and she died 2 years later. And I always say that, you know, if you can survive the winters of Canada, then, you know, survival of the fittest, then you can live till 100. That was my joke. But anyway, so he says, Hamashal, he wants to answer this question with a mashal. And he says the following. there's a king, and he gives out stones that have the potential, if you work them very well, to make beautiful jewels out of them. And he instructs all these people, each one getting respectively their stone to work on, to spend a great deal of time and beautify these stones, to make them into mishpitzos zahav. You know, if you've ever seen a gold, a crown or so, it has different, you know, frames, you know, where you put the gold into. And the kings used to enjoy receiving these kinds of beautiful jewels. So here's what the king said. He says, those who are zaris, who do a great job, and they put in a tremendous amount of effort to make a tikkun, again, that's a key word here, to beautify and improve these precious raw material stones with hishtadlus, with a great deal of effort, then for each tikkun that you do, for each beautification that you achieve in each one of these beautiful stones, that will be your chelek. That will be your nachla. In other words, you'll be able to enjoy the benefits. Maybe there'll be a long-term loan, and you'll be able to, you know, wear these jewels or give them to your wife to wear. I don't know what. He doesn't go into details. And then, what did he do? The king had apparently a massive volume of stones, and nasan havonim b'mispar har b'miyom l'chol ish v'ish. Every person who is going to be in this challenge was given shloshmeos elef, 300,000 stones. Others got 350,000 stones. Okay, now I need a calculator here to if, you know, in the nimshal, each stone is going to represent another day of the life. Can anybody tell me, let's say 1,000 years would be, how many? 365 times 1,000. Yeah. So you're talking about 360,000. So we're talking about numbers that parallel 1,000 years of a life. If each stone represents another day in your life, then 350,000 stones is very similar to correspond to, let's say, Adam HaRishon, who lived to 930. Kabbalem Zmanesh Yaspik Lulocha. He gave them enough time to work. Every stone would be you dedicate one day of your life to work on every single stone. Ukimlos hayomim, and the deal was that after this time period would pass, and we're talking about many, many years, as you can imagine, then pakad hamelech. Okay, if you could underline the word pakad, because the word pakad means the Yom Pekida. The Yom Pekida is referring to the Day of Reckoning. So the Day of Reckoning came around, and the king called in all his supposed workers, meaning all these people who were granted the many, many stones. Vehine, yachad usvu, they were collected together. Himtziu, they were presented in front of the king. It would have been bad enough if they had not beautified the stones. Even worse than that, kilkalu osam, they were in worse shape than when he gave them to them. Velichluchu osam, they became filthy. Hechzirum, they returned it to the king when they were in worse shape than when they got it. Here they were meant to improve, and instead they gave it back worse. And you can imagine how angry the king was. And he put them all to death by fire. Okay? The fire here represents Gehenna here in the Nimshal. And then Hamid Bneim Tachtom, he said to the next generation, you know what? Your fathers did a very bad job. But you know what? Let's see if you could do a job. And maybe you could improve. But he realized, the king, that he has to make it a little easier for them. So Vayiten Lehem Shloshim Elef, instead of giving 300,000 stones, he gave him 30,000 stones, one tenth, or Arboim Elef. And he felt that if the number of stones that they're given is smaller, then psychologically it makes it easier for a person to to get to work. You know, I don't have to work for 1,000 years, I have to work for 100 years. And in the next paragraph, which is in the bottom right of your page 2, he speaks about the Nimshal. What do you derive from this metaphor? He says, the Melech Yisrael, the King of Israel, Elkei HaOlam Baruch Hu, the God of the universe, Chilek Avonim Tovos, he gave out beautiful stones that were meant to be improved upon. What are these stones? These are Neshamos. And he quotes a Kabbalistic concept called Roeh Evan Yisrael, that every neshama is like an Evan. And every Kalim, that remember we spoke before about the Kalim, has a potential to be improved upon. Now, what, you know, when you have the stones, so in the mashal, you need utensils, you need tools to work on stones. That's why you pay a good jeweler. So what are the tools that God gave us when He divided the neshamas? Ha'achana shehechem biyadenu ha'torah u'mitzvos. That Torah and mitzvos are going to be the kalim that we could use to improve the neshama. Lahayir osam, to bring out the light of the neshama, lasosam betikun, in order to improve them, asher yos lasos, which would be the proper appropriate way of doing it. And in this case, kibem tzaut etatzmut adam, since man would put a lot of effort into Torah mitzvahs, then richuk hara and pushing away evil, al pi Torah. The neshama will be so improved and so upgraded, you know, so inspired with a light of the Torah, that God will prepare a kise, a special throne, and that throne will have all these beautiful mishmatos, you know, that those gold ornaments, the yaknelem keser malchus. Again, this is all metaphysical. He doesn't mean physically a keser, you know, a crown, but a crown that represents kingship. L'rishonim Yisrael Hashem laharbos lehem amloch on the top of the left column. And when we started with Adam, with the first man, God gave them lots and lots of opportunities, many days, many nitzotzos, and these were each one, you know, meant to be used for the, you know, with a great deal of work and toil to improve. But then, when he realized that man was simply distorting all of his spiritual capabilities and gifts, the neshama, instead of becoming more beautified, man sinned, and he desecrated the holiness of this neshama, and it became defective, is therefore Higbil on the second line, he limited L'chol chelek malachto yom echad, and this is what it says in the Parsha of the Man, Dvar yom biyomo, that every day you will have it. So originally, Adam, meaning Adam HaRishon, had 300,000 parts to his soul. Each of those parts is called the Nitzotz, and each one corresponds to a day in his life, and that equals to 930 years. Okay, that's the key word here. When they messed up and they made the neshama defective, parts Hashem ben peretz, and now God says, okay, if you can't take this job, this torah, this very heavy burden of 1,000 years or 930, then the pekida will be much closer. In other words, God will make the day of reckoning a lot closer to your birth, to the day of your birth. And then hopefully, in that shorter span of time, with less challenges, man is able and capable of using his time to the best. That's what they say, by the way, that older people take more advantage of time than younger people, because they realize that life is going by very quickly. And that's what led us to the state of being today, where our lives are either 70 years or perhaps 80 years, Chamisha V'Yesrim Elif Yom, which is equivalent to 25,000 days. So we have only 25,000 days instead of 350,000 days, and that's what we have to do. And now the Aruch Chaim wants to say, this is going to shed a light on a Mishnah at the end of Masech Tekinim, which is one of the last Masechtas in Shas. And the Mishnah, in the name of Rav Shimon ben Akasha, which is number 9, posits a sharp contrast between what's called Ziknei Am HaOretz and Ziknei Torah, meaning from the nations of the world, the older people. When they get older, their mind just loses it. They can't think coherently. But Ziknei Torah calls Mancha Maskinim, the older they get, Daiton Misyasheves Alehim. Their das becomes even sharper. So the Arachaim says, wait a minute, this is number 10. He says, that's not really true. Because if you look at physical man, the older he gets, even if he's a chacham, even if he's a wise person, and even if he's dedicated to the study of Torah, lo yuchal latzeis v'lovok b'milchalta shel Torah, he doesn't have that sensibility, that sensitivity to fight the battle of Torah. V'yismatu agishosav, and his insights are much more limited. So what then does the Mishnah mean when it says that ziknei Torah daitom misyasheves aleihem? He says it, the word misyasheves, which means it, like ke'ilu, it gets sharper, is just a word to contrast with the ziknei am ha'aretz shemistarefes. Because for the am ha'aretz, you know, for the people of the world who don't have Torah, then old age means that they lose their power of intellect as they get older, and it becomes ye'ofes. Ye'ofes comes close to zero. In contrast, the Ziknei Torah, though physically they become weaker, because that's the way it works, that the older you get, the weaker you get, and different parts of the body no longer function the way they used to. But nevertheless, the mind is still sharp enough to understand the Torah. And all this makes sense in the light of the Arizal that we discussed. He says, Ki letzad shenistalku kol chelkei ha-nefesh, we remember that the neshama is made up of different parts. Each part is called a nitzotz, and each nitzotz, after the day passes, goes up. You know, it separates itself from the nefesh. Is therefore the koach, the energy of the neshama and the nefesh, is now muot. Muot means it's more limited. Hanishar, because he has less chelkei hanefesh. He has less nitzotzos. With the passage of every day, he loses another one of those powerful forces that give life, which is called the nitzotz. And therefore it makes sense, shalotamar aguf, that the physical body of man no longer has that power and that prowess that it did have, yichbad ksos al koso, and therefore man becomes weaker. But nevertheless, the mind of the Ziknei Torah, the Ziknei Chachma, still function, and they're still, you know, they're still sharp. And we mentioned Rav Steinemann before. He died just recently at the age of 104, and he was still writing chidushim. You know, he still had insights. His mind was very sharp. Now, how many pages did I give you?
I only
gave you 1 page with 2 sides on it? All right. So you know what? I'm just going to summarize page 3. And this is again the Orach Chaim HaKadosh. And he wants to use the Arizal even further to shed a light on a pasuk in Tehillim. The pasuk says the following. Tastir panech, when God hides his face, yibahelun, we are overwhelmed by confusion. Tosef rucham, when God removes the ruach, the spirit of man, yigavon, and then we sort of wither up, ve'alafaram yeshuvun, and we return to dust. He says that this pasuk is very interesting. He says nobody really understands this pasuk properly. Why? Lo Omar, it doesn't say Tosef birucham. Now, according to Hebrew grammar, this pasuk, or at least one word in this pasuk, is a little bit off kilter. It shouldn't have said Tosef rucham, but rather Tosef birucham. Okay, we'll see if we can explain this. He says, according to the Arizal, we can understand this pasuk like the light of sun. Why? Kishiyagia ketzah, when man comes close to the end, pkudas nafsho, when he's going to be called up on high on the day of reckoning, What does it mean, Tosef Rucham? It means that all of the Chelkei HaNefesh, all of those parts of the soul, those Nitzotzos that we spoke about, Shenadu, that moved the Holchu, and they left the Nefesh Midei Laila V'Laila, right? They separated themselves from the Nefesh, is Tosef Rucham. God will collect all of these neshamos, all of these powers of life that are called nitzotzos. And Hagam Shaholeches, even though these nitzotzos separated themselves from the nefesh, and Eino Nekeres Behechleit, but the Arizal says that they weren't completely removed from the person, but rather they were separated from the person, Ki Yitzias HaNeshama Balayla, just like at night when a person goes to sleep, the Nitzot separates from a person, that's why he falls asleep, but Kish Be'es Shemeir Ora Baguf Lamata, he says when he wakes up in the morning after sleeping, then somehow when a person wakes up in the morning, he feels an extra energy force. Why? Because that nitzot, although it's separated from him at night when it went up to where it has to go, nevertheless it's still there in close proximity to give him a new energy and to project him to where he has to go. Although again, he's getting closer and closer to the end. Now what happens at the very end? Then Tosef Rucham, God's going to collect all these nitzotzos and bring them to a point where they can project him in the next world. And therefore, he says, we can shed a light on the pasuk that we began with, Vayikrivu Yemei Yisrael Lamus. What does it mean, Vayikrivu Yemei Yisrael? We said that the word kreva refers to the location of two physical objects, but time, it doesn't exist in space, and you can't collect time and put them together. Perush. But what it really means on a deeper level is that Chelkei HaNeshama Sha'olu Vimenu, all these parts of his neshama that went up and separated from his Tselem on a daily basis, meaning after the day passed, Tvar Yom B'Yomo, Hein Ata now Karvu, they were gathered together, these Nitzotzos were gathered together, as we saw in this Pasuk in Tehillim, Tosef Rucham, which means the various Chelkei HaNeshama gathered together. Vehu Omro Lamos, right? The pasuk says, "Vayikruvu Yemei Yisrael Lamos." Hirgish Yaakov Avinu b'Tosefes Hamaruba Ki Bo Yemei Ashilum. When these nitzotzos are gathered together, they re-energize the person towards the very end, and then project them into the world to come. Ki Bo Yemei Ashilum, and now that moment of time in which all the nitzotzos of a person will be gathered together has arrived. Vayikra l'bino Yosef, and then he calls Yosef. So what gives Yaakov Avinu, who's laying in his deathbed, the ability and the energy to call his son Yosef to get him together and then be mashbia him about his remains to take him to Eretz Canaan? That energy force comes from Tosef Rucham, from the fact that God collects together and brings all these nitzotzos together, and that gives man one last like burst of energy before he leaves this world. And again, we don't have time for the Arvei Nachal, but he says that when it comes to tzaddikim, right before they die, they get a revelation in which they see what their zchuyot, what their merits are, and how those merits are going to project them in Gan Eden. So in order to close our discussion for today, I want to just read to you a paragraph from the Chafetz Chaim, Zichrono Livracha. You know that the Chafetz Chaim wrote many books, and one of them is called the Avas Chesed, how we have to take advantage of the opportunities to do chesed. So he writes the following. And this, Michael, is the moralist speaking, no longer the Kabbalist. So we're making a major transition, but that's how I wanted to end the shiur today. He says, Mi'od tzarech lizor, we have to be very careful, shelo yechzar lo, that a person shouldn't be lacking midas ha-chesed, implementation of chesed, afilu yom echad, even one day, mi'yemei chayav. And he says the following, that there are two major challenges that every Jew has to face on a daily basis. And he has to take the opportunity to live up to those challenges. Number one, Tzarech lizor le'inyin kviyas itim le'Torah b'chol yom. Every day presents a challenge to dedicate oneself to the study of Torah. And number two, every day presents a challenge to a person to utilize opportunities for chesed. The kazeh matzasi b'sefer sharei kedusha l'morenu Rav Chaim Vital. Now, Rabbos, we've been studying the works of Rav Chaim Vital tonight. And I didn't think that the Chafetz Chaim would have admitted or would have dedicated his time to the study of Rav Chaim Vital, which is basically the Arizal. Shekosav, and what do we learn from Rav Chaim Vital? Sha'odam tzorech lis'onen b'chol yom v'lomar. On a daily basis, a person has to look at each day and say, if unfortunately he didn't do the tikkun that he had to do, oily woe to me, shaholach hayom, the day passed, b'li Torah u'gmilus chasodim. And he says the following, there are three pillars of the world. There's Torah, avoda, and chesed, and gmilus chasodim. Bavanoseinu arabim, unfortunately, we don't have the Beis HaMikdash, chasa lanu hamud, avoda. Since the Churban Abayis, which we're going to start commemorating tomorrow night, you know, going into Asar B'Teves, we no longer have the Amud of Avoda. So what we're left with is just Torah and Gemilus Chasodim, Eluhem Shnei Amudim. Is therefore Muchrochim Anu Lechazkam, we have to strengthen ourselves, each person, and rededicate ourselves to these two Amudim, namely Torah and Gemilus Chasodim. And he says not only that, will we be able to achieve the nitzot of that day, but also b'zeyu nimcholim avonoseinu, because there's a special power in both chesed and in Torah to bring about a mechila and wipe off, rectify all our inequities, all our sins. And as we said before, in the name of Chaim Vital, and in the name of the Arizal, those nitzot, even if we pollute them, they're still close enough that we can achieve a tshuva and upgrade them and clean them up, so to speak, and rectify and perfect them. How does the Chofetz Chaim know that the two most powerful forces are chesed and Torah and limud Torah to bring about this tshuva, this kapora? He quotes two psukim, and with this we'll close for tonight. One pasuk is in Sefer Mishle. The pasuk says, "Bechesed Yechaper Avon." Okay, that's in the 16th parak of Mishle, but in the 21st parak of Mishle it says, Rodef Tzdok of a Chesed. So when we speak about Chesed, a Rodef Chesed is a person who will achieve Yechaper Avon. But the Pasuk says, Bechesed the Emes Yechaper Avon. The Chofetz Chaim says that the word Emes is a reference to Torah. So basically, Yechaper Avon, the power of man to improve and rectify those nitzotzos that he polluted, chas v'sholom, and achieve a full kapara, is inherent in these two amudim of Torah and Gemilas Chasodim. And every day in our lives represents a challenge in and of itself to improve those nitzotzos and achieve tshuva and kapara. And how do we go about doing so? We mechazik ourselves in these two ways, in these two approaches, these methods of Torah and gemilus chasod. So that's what I have. So let's just see what we did for tonight. We did pages 1 and 2. I more or less summarized the beginning of page 3 and the end of page 4. So we have 1.5 pages left. But I don't think that I'm going to necessarily come back to this for next week. This was an experiment of sorts. You know, it was a little bit tough for me. I tried to do the best I could in integrating both the, you know, metaphysics and the mysticism of the Ari with a little bit of Musar at the end. But basically the message is that we should take advantage of Yirtz Hashem of every single day, which is another Nitzotz. And we no longer have the 350,000 days that they had back in the time of Adam HaRishon, but whatever days God gives us, Yirtz Hashem will use for the best. And then thanks everyone for coming. Please.
So in connection to how what our like purpose is, is to do basically for an
right.
And then you would work out what your actual, because every neshama have some sort of specific.
Right, right. Every neshama is challenged in its own unique individual way. We don't have the challenge of avoda today because of after the Churban Habayis,
yeah.
And therefore the Chofetz Chaim says that what's left for us on a daily basis is Torah and Gemilas Chasad. Those are the key challenges, and that'll bring about Kapara. He based it on Sukkim and Mishle.
Why do we say Adonai Avestrim? If it's, is that like the ultimate?
That's what we can hope for today. I don't know if anyone can live beyond that. Well, you know, Moshe Rabbeinu died at the age of 120.
Is that why they say Adonai Avestrim? Because of Moshe, right?
Right.